It's a Christmas edition of Tuned to Yesterday, bringing you holiday programs from radio's past. I'm your host, Mark Levonier, or at the very least, holiday-themed. In this hour, the hard-boiled side of the holidays, later on from the Old West on Gunsmoke. But first, a story from the mysterious traveler called Christmas Story. First heard on the Mutual Broadcasting System on Christmas Day, 1951.
Mutual Broadcasting System presents The Mysterious Traveler, written, produced, and directed by Robert A. Arthur and David Coben, and starring two of radio's foremost personalities, Leon Janney and Ann Shepherd, in Christmas Story. This is The Mysterious Traveler, inviting you to join me on another journey into the realm of the strange and the terrifying. I hope you will enjoy the trip, that it will thrill you a little and chill you a little. So settle back, get a good grip on your nerves, and be comfortable, if you can, as we hear the tale of an enterprising young man. It's the drama I call Christmas Story.
My name is Steve Farrell, and I've just gotten through playing Santa Claus. Yeah, you're looking at a guy who really played it to the hilt. It all started last month in Seattle. I was out of a job and down to my last few bucks. I was looking through the morning paper when I noticed this small ad in the personal column. Driving to New York, November 15th. Man wanted to assist in driving. Free transportation. Paul Harris, Hotel Royal. Well, I'd always wanted to see New York, and this was as good as any way of getting there, so I went up to this Hotel Royal to see this guy, Harris. Mr. Harris?
Yes?
My name's Farrell, Steve Farrell. I read your ad in the morning paper.
Oh, yes. Won't you come in?
Thank you. If you haven't already found someone to help you drive to New York, I'd like to offer my services.
Well, as a matter of fact, I haven't. Can you leave for New York a day after tomorrow?
Sure, anytime.
Well, good. Then why not come around at 9 in the morning and we'll get off to an early start?
Okay, Mr. Harris, 9 it is. Let me know when you're tired driving, Mr. Harris, and I'll take over.
Thanks, I will. Why not call me Paul, huh?
Okay. Steve is my first name. Lewiston, 30 miles.
Lewiston, that's Idaho, isn't it?
Yeah, we're just crossing the state line into Idaho.
Oh, this is all new to me. I was born and raised in Alaska. This is my first trip to the States.
Well, you're going to see a lot of scenery between here and New York.
Yes, I'm looking forward to it.
Life must have been pretty rugged in Alaska.
Oh, it was. My parents were homesteaders. I never saw a city until a week ago when I arrived in Seattle.
How come you're going to New York?
Well, my parents died last year, and my grandfather, whom I've never seen, wrote asking me to come visit him.
You never seen him, huh?
No. No, there was some sort of squabble between my parents and my grandfather before I was born, and they went to Alaska. And in all the years since then, my grandfather never wrote to them.
Sounds like a stubborn guy.
Yeah, he sure does. What are you going to New York for?
Oh, mainly to look for a job. And I've always wanted to see the big city.
So have I. Do you mind taking over now, Steve? My eyes are getting tired.
Be glad to. Just pull over to the side of the road. It's a long way from Seattle to New York. And there wasn't a radio in the car, so we just talked. And mostly we talked about Paul, his life in Alaska, his parents, his grandfather. By the time we hit Columbus, Ohio, there wasn't a thing I didn't know about the guy. And from what he told me, his grandfather was loaded. And even more, he was the old man's only relative. It was obvious the kid was walking into a fortune. Yeah, some guys had all the luck.
So these are the Allegheny Mountains.
Yeah. You better take it easy, Paul. The road's a little slippery.
Okay. How much further to New York?
250 miles. It's getting dark. We better stop for the night at the next tourist court.
All right. Well, we should be able to make New York by tomorrow afternoon.
Yeah, easy.
What are you going to do when we get there, Steve?
Start hunting for a job.
Look, Steve, why don't you come to my grandfather's house with me? I'm sure he won't mind putting you up for a few nights.
Oh, thanks, kid, but don't worry about me. I'll be all right.
Steve, I don't want to lose track of you. I thought we were friends.
Sure we are. As soon as I get located, I'll let you know where I am.
You know, I thought this being your first visit to New York and mine, we might see the town together. You know, the Statue of Liberty, the
Statue
Empire...
of Liberty. Yeah, sure.
Yeah, while we're the same age, I'm afraid I haven't been around very much. I guess it's like you said, I'm strictly from the woods.
Just 1 year in New York and you'll be hep to everything. Your eyes bothering you?
Yeah, a little.
You better let me take over when you get to the bottom of this mountain.
Okay.
You know, you ought to see an eye doctor. Your eyes seem to get tired awful quick.
Well, the truth of the matter...
Hey, look out, kid. We're starting to skid. No, don't jam on the brakes. That only makes it worse. Reverse your wheel.
I have. Steve, we're skidding off the road toward the mountain.
Give me that wheel and do as I say.
We're out of control. We're going over.
When I regained consciousness, I was lying a few feet from the car. We'd rolled 300. Buck had run out. He'd never see all that dough that was waiting for him in New York. Yeah, it was then that it came to me. I hadn't wished the guy dead, but now that he was, and nobody in the States knew Paul or what he looked like, and on the other hand, I knew everything about him. Well, it was a gamble, all right, but there was a fortune in the kitty. I went to work switching our clothes and all identification. Just as I finished, a state police patrol car came along the mountain road and spotted the wreck. They took me to headquarters, where I made a complete statement. A couple of hours later, I grabbed a train for New York.
I'm George Marlowe, your grandfather's attorney.
How do you do, Mr. Marlowe?
The Pennsylvania State Police informed me of the dreadful accident you had. I understand a man who was with you was killed.
Yes, a fellow by the name of Steve Farrell. I met him in Seattle. He assisted me with the driving.
Too bad, but thank heavens it wasn't you. It would have been your grandfather's death blow.
How is he?
Weak, very weak, but eagerly waiting to see you. All right, come along.
Yes, sir.
How's that gash on your head?
Oh, not too bad. It was treated by a doctor at the state police headquarters.
You can only spend a few minutes with your grandfather, and excitement must be avoided by all means.
I understand.
And here we are. How is he, Joan?
He's much better this afternoon.
Good. Joan, this is Paul Harris. Paul Joan Dietrich, your grandfather's nurse.
How do you do?
Hello.
Paul. Is that you, Paul?
Yes, sir.
Come over here where I can see you.
Yes, grandfather.
So, you're Paul, my grandson.
Yes, sir.
Sit down by my bed and let me look at you.
All right, grandfather.
You don't look like your mother. Must take after your father's side of the family.
Yes, I do.
That bandage. What happened, Paul?
Well, I was in an accident, but it's nothing, just a scratch.
You're sure?
Yes, of course.
I suppose you're wondering why I sent for you after all these years, cutting off your mother, father.
Does it matter now? The main thing is, I'm here.
You know, lying here for months, I've had a great deal of time to think things over. I was wrong, Paul. Your mother, she had a perfect right to marry anyone she wished. It was only my stubbornness that prevented the reconciliation.
We all make mistakes.
Yes, yes, but 30 years of not seeing my own flesh and blood. It's been lonely, Paul. So lonely. And all my fault.
But you're not alone anymore. I'm here.
Yes. Yes, Paul, yes. What little time I have left, we must spend together.
I think that's enough for now. Mr. Marshall, Paul can come and see you later, after your nap.
But just a few more minutes, John.
After your nap.
Oh, she's a wonderful girl, Paul. But a tyrant. Come see me as soon as I'm awake.
All right, Grandfather.
Now let me fix your pillows for you.
Just your being here seems to have helped him, Paul.
What do the doctors say, Mr. Marlowe?
Week, month, several months at the outside.
That bad, huh?
Yes. Well, you must be tired after your trip. I had your suitcase taken to your room. Do you have any other luggage on the way?
There's a small trunk coming, but it won't be here for weeks.
If you need any money, just let me know. Your grandfather's placed a considerable sum at your disposal.
Thanks. But I still have $2,000 left of the $5,000 he sent me.
Very well, Paul. Remember, if there's anything at all you want, just let me know.
Yeah, I was in. There was no question that I'd passed as Paul Harris. And why not? I had all the answers, and I was playing it careful. I walked through room after room of that Fifth Avenue mansion, knowing that within a matter of months, it would be mine. In the weeks that followed, not a day passed, and I didn't spend a few hours with the old man. He liked me, I could see that. And the funny thing is, I liked him, too. During our little chats, there were times I felt I was his grandson. And sitting in at these little sessions, not saying much, just watching with those gray eyes of hers, was Joan Dietrich. She was one lovely dish. And I could feel things building between us. Whenever she got an evening off, we went out together. Having a good time?
Wonderful. I love dancing. Why, Mr. Harris, what are we doing out here on the terrace? The music's in the air.
Too many people in there. You know, if you don't make a pass at me soon, I'm going to get discouraged.
Ours is a short acquaintance. 3 weeks.
What's the time got to do with it? The day I walked into my grandfather's room, first saw you, you knew this moment would come.
Oh, darling.
I feel the same way, baby. So I was flying. Love me?
You know I do.
And why the tears?
Oh, I do love you. And I want to believe in you, but I'm so confused. So confused.
About what? Go on. I want to hear.
Are you really Paul Harris?
What makes you ask that?
In your talks with Mr. Marshall, several things you said seemed strange.
Such as?
Your grandfather spoke of a restaurant in San Francisco, and you said you knew it. Yet if you are Paul Harris, how could you not? Paul Harris has never been to San Francisco.
I might have taken in San Francisco on the way to New York, you know. What else bothers you?
You mentioned a television show you'd seen 6 months ago. There is no television in Alaska. If you're Paul Harris, how could you have seen it?
People up in Alaska see kinescopes of television shows, baby. They're shown like movies.
Oh, darling, just tell me I'm wrong. That's all I want to hear.
I wish I could tell you I'm Paul Harris. But I'm not.
You're not?
No. The name is Farrell, Steve Farrell.
Steve Farrell?
Hmm.
Wasn't that the fellow that was killed in that... It was Paul Harris who was killed. You changed identity.
Yes.
Oh, how could you? How could you?
I was tired of being broke, of going from one lousy job to another. I saw a chance to grab a fortune and took it. What are you going to do?
I should go to the police. I can't. Mr. Marshall thinks you're his grandson. He's extremely fond of you. If the truth were to come out, it would kill him.
Is that the only reason you can't go to the police?
Oh, Steve, what are we going to do?
Nothing.
Nothing.
That's right. I'm going on being Paul Harris until the old man dies. Then I'm taking the estate.
You can't, Steve. You can't.
Why not? While the old man's alive, I'm making him happy. If I get his estate when he dies, who loses by it? It isn't as though he has other relatives. Why shouldn't I get it?
No, it's wrong, Steve. It's wrong.
It's wrong only if you're caught, baby. Only if you're caught. Hello, baby. What you doing up here on the roof?
Just getting a little fresh air while Mr. Marshall sleeps.
How is he?
He can't last more than a few days.
Who are you crying for? The old man? Or me?
Both of you. Oh, Steve, ever since the other night when you told me, I haven't been able to think of anything else. It's wrong, Steve. It's so wrong.
Who am I hurting if I get the estate? I deserve it if anyone does. At least I'm making the old man happy in his last hours.
What if you're caught? Do you realize they'd send you to prison?
That's the chances you take, baby. Besides, who's going to get wise to me?
There's Mr. Marlowe, and he's nobody's fool. Just one little slip, Steve, and he'll be on to you.
Marlowe's a sharp citizen, all right, but I don't intend to make that one slip. Oh.
Someone's coming up onto the roof.
Hello, you two. Thought I'd find you up here.
Hello.
How are you, Mr. Marlowe?
Quite well, thank you. I understand Mr. Marshall's asleep.
Yes, I left Mrs. Walker to look after him. He should be waking up soon.
Maybe we better go down. My grandfather has... Oh!
What's the matter?
Something in your eye, Paul?
Yes, a cinder.
Oh, left eye, huh?
Yes.
Well, stop rubbing it. Put your handkerchief over it.
Hmm.
That's it.
It stings like the devil.
Go on over and sit on the chair. And I'll try to take it out for you.
You want me to assist you to the chair?
No, I can still walk.
Now sit down and tilt your head back.
Hmm.
That's it. Take the handkerchief away. Oh, I see it. Hold still. There, I got it.
Thanks, Joan.
I think we better go down now.
Yeah, okay.
You coming, Mr. Marlowe?
What? Oh, yes. Yes. I'm coming.
Mrs. Walker says that Mr. Marshall was asleep when she looked in on him a few minutes ago.
Seems he's still sleeping.
Perhaps we'd better leave and wait until he wakens.
No. I'm going to wake him. It's time for his medicine. Mr. Marshall? Mr. Marshall, time for your medicine. Mr. Marshall.
What is it, Joan?
There's no pulse.
Are you sure?
Yes. He's dead.
Well, at least the end came peacefully. He died in his sleep.
Joan took the old man's death hard, and I felt pretty upset myself. Even with all that dough waiting. As for Marlowe, he was his usual efficient self, looking after all the details of the funeral. Maybe it was the tension I was under, but Marlowe seemed changed to me. He wasn't quite so friendly. And sometimes I turned to find him watching me, giving me the cold eye. I couldn't be sure whether it was my imagination or not. After we got back from the funeral, I was in my room when there was a knock on the door. Come in. Oh, hello, Joan. Come in.
Mr. Marlowe's downstairs in the library. Wants to see you.
Close the door.
Anything wrong?
Plenty.
Whose trunk is that you're going through?
Paul's. It arrived this morning while we were at the funeral.
Steve, what's wrong?
I've just been going through some of Paul's personal papers. I knew, of course, that he was 4F in the draft, but I never knew why.
What are you trying to tell me?
Paul was 4F in the draft because he was blind in the right eye.
Blind in the right eye?
Yes. That's why I've been getting the cold shoulder from Marlowe these past 3 days, ever since the afternoon we were on the roof.
I don't understand.
Somehow Marlowe knew that Paul was blind in the right eye, and when I got that cinder in my left eye, I covered it with my handkerchief. You told me to walk across the roof to the chair, sit down.
Oh, yes, I remember.
At that point, Marlowe offered to lead me to the chair.
Knowing you were blind in the right eye and had your left eye covered with a handkerchief.
Yes. When I walked over to the chair without hesitation, that must have started him thinking.
Oh, Steve.
Now, don't get panicky, baby. Marlowe can't be sure he's right. At the moment, he's just suspicious.
But if he really investigates,
I've got to kill the suspicion in his mind. Stop him from doing any checking.
But how?
I don't know yet. Well, come on, he's waiting for us in the library. Sorry to have kept you waiting, Mr. Marlowe.
That's quite all right.
If you'll excuse me,
I'll... No, Joan, don't go. No reason why you shouldn't hear what I have to say. Tomorrow, Christmas Day, I'll officially read Mr. Marshall's will. However, I don't think I'm violating a trust in telling you the contents of the will. 2 weeks ago, Mr. Marshall had me draw up a new will, leaving his entire estate to you, Paul.
I see.
He was quite taken by you. Felt that you were a credit to his name. Why are you crying, Joan?
Nothing.
As administrator of Mr. Marshall's will, it is my duty to see to it that the heirs, or heir, receive their just inheritances. This duty I shall fulfill.
I understand.
I am responsible under law for the awarding of the huge estate left by Mr. Marshall, and I shall have to... Is your eye troubling you? You've been doing nothing but rubbing it since you came into this room.
Sorry, Mr. Marlowe. As you know, I'm blind in my right eye, and now and then my left eye feels quite strained, particularly at a time like this. My grandfather's death, the funeral. You understand?
Why, yes. Yes, of course.
You were saying?
What? Oh, well, it's not important at the moment. I'll be here tomorrow at 3 for the reading of the will.
I'll see to it that all the servants are here.
Very well. Good night, Joan. Paul?
Good night, Mr. Marlowe.
Good night.
Steve? He's confused. That business of the eyes, he doesn't know what to think now.
Yeah, it stopped him for the moment.
But only for a moment.
Hard to tell. But I've got to do something once and for all to convince him I'm Paul Harris. Now, I didn't get to sleep that night. I just tossed and turned, trying to come up with an angle that would kill Marlowe's suspicions. Maybe that business of rubbing my eyes had satisfied him. But I had to make sure. It was the difference between being handed a fortune and a prison sentence. This afternoon at 3 o'clock, the servants, Joan, Marlowe, and myself gathered in the library. The whole thing was over in an hour. The servants all congratulated me and left the library, leaving only the three of us there.
I should like to offer a toast to Mr. Marshall's memory, if you'll permit me.
Of course.
This was his favorite sherry. Joan?
Thank you.
Paul?
Thanks.
Here's to Peter Marshall, a man who lived honorably, died honorably. May his heir be worthy of him.
As the three of us raised our glasses to our lips and drank, I could see Marlowe watching me over the brim of his glass with those cold blue eyes of his. We set down our glasses, and I turned to give Joan a cigarette. Out of the corner of my eye, I saw Marlowe pick up one of the three wine glasses. Suddenly, I realized it was my glass he picked up. He held it casually, almost as if he didn't know he was holding it. In that moment, I was going nuts, trying to guess whether he was satisfied that I was Paul Harris or he was still suspicious and going after me. My fingerprints were on that glass, and the Army had a copy of those prints in Washington. This was it. Either I play my cards and go for the fortune, or throw in my hand. Suddenly, I felt Joan's hand in mine. Say, Mr. Marlowe.
Yes?
You say this will, leaving me my grandfather's estate, is a new one.
Yes, I drew it up only 2 weeks ago.
What was the old will like?
Well, under the old will, your grandfather's estate went to charity.
I thought as much. Mr. Marlowe, Joan and I have been talking things over. I don't want the estate. I want it all to go to charity, as originally intended.
Dear me, I seem to have dropped my glass. You realize, of course, what you would be giving up.
I never really had it, Mr. Marlowe, so I hardly think I'll miss it. Joan and I'll get along, won't we, baby?
Oh, yes.
Well, Paul, is that your considered decision?
It is.
It's a gesture worthy of Peter Marshall's grandson.
Yes, and that little gesture did it. Any guy who gives up a $2 million estate can hardly be called an imposter, can he? No, sir. It's Christmas, and I've just played Santa Claus to the tune of $2 million. The thing I keep wondering about is, what would have happened if I hadn't given up the estate? Would Marlowe have gone after me? Or was he satisfied that I was Paul Harris? Yes, sir. That little puzzle is going to give me plenty of thought for a long time to come.
This is the Mysterious Traveler again. Did you enjoy our trip? What happened to Paul Harris? Or rather, I should say, Steve Farrell? He and Joan were married, and the poor fellow's now working at an honest living. Sometimes he thinks of the $2 million estate he gave up, but then with taxes what they are, what could he have kept in any case? Only a fortune. Which reminds me of a story in which another enterprising young man allowed himself to be killed for the sake of acquiring... Oh, you have to get off here. I'm sorry. But allow me to wish you a Merry Christmas before you go. And remember, I take this same train every week at this same time.
The Mysterious Traveler, on Tuned to Yesterday from the 25th of December, 1951, on the Mutual Broadcasting System. This is an hour of Christmas programs on Tuned to Yesterday. I'm your host, Mark Lefonier. Now a broadcast for the holidays on Gunsmoke that was first heard in December of 1956. This would be the rebroadcast on December 20th, 1959, of the Les Crutchfield story, Beaker's Barn. First heard on CBS, this recording from the Armed Forces Radio Service Christmas Show Library.
Around Dodge City and in the territory on West, there's just one way to handle the killers and the spoilers, and that's with a U.S. Marshal and the smell of gun smoke. Gun smoke. starring William Conrad. The story of the violence that moved west with young America. And the story of a man who moved with it.
I'm that man. Matt Dillon, United States Marshal. The first man they look for and the last they want to meet. It's a chancy job, and it makes a man watchful and a little lonely.
This ain't the smoothest wagon trail I ever seen, but it'll save us a couple of hours going cross country this way.
Don't worry about me, Will. I'll be all right.
It's just I don't like the looks of that storm. Not this time of year. There's a lot of snow in them clouds.
You think we can beat the storm to the line shaft?
Ought to.
You sure?
Of course I'm sure. Come on, you. Here. Come on. As soon as we get to the top of this rise, you'll see it.
Oh, no.
Burned. Every last stick of it burned.
Will, what are we going to do?
Some hunter, some drifter may be left a fire without sand in it, and now it's gone.
I guess the only thing is to head for Dodge, then.
Well, we'd be driving all night.
Well, we can't stay out here, Will. We got to find shelter.
I know.
There must be a ranch house somewhere.
There's just one that I know of.
Well, then let's... No, we ain't going there.
We don't have much choice, Harmony.
Will, I couldn't. I just couldn't.
Harmony, that's the only ranch within 15 miles of drive. 4 hours more in this wind and cold might just be too much. Like I say, Harmony, we just don't have no choice. We're heading for the ranch.
It's a good thing I toted in all that stove wood, Mr. Dillon. We're going to need plenty of it before morning.
Yeah, it'll be a real cold night, it sure looks like.
Snow keeps on there, so it's going to be 2 foot deep on the level.
You know, if you don't take your boots off that stove, you're going to have 2 feet on the bare ground, Chester.
What are you talking about?
Chester, the soles are starting to smoke. Now take them off the stove.
I declare, Mr. Dillon, I thought I smelled something burning in here.
The stove's red hot.
Yeah, well, at least my feet's warm for the first time in 2 days.
No.
Say, I think maybe I'll rub them with Tella. Leather ought to soak it up real good, being hot that way. And,
Evening, Matt.
Oh, Kitty, come on in.
Oh, it's cold out tonight.
Stand there by the stove and burn with Chester.
I can't stay, Matt. I got to get back to Long Branch.
Oh, big crowd tonight?
Yeah, but quiet one. Men get sentimental at Christmas time.
I'm that way myself, Miss Kitty.
Yeah, so am I, Chester. I was thinking earlier this evening what it was like when I was a little girl. We used to always... It was a long time ago.
Why don't you stay a while, Kitty? Let Sam run the place tonight, huh?
Well, the boys sort of need me, Matt. To talk to them and laugh with them. Even though they're thinking of somebody else at the time.
Well, yeah, I know, but...
Oh, I don't mind. It's kind of nice to be needed by somebody. What I was thinking, though, Matt, later, around midnight, maybe the three of us could get together... Make some hot rum, maybe?
That's a good idea, Kitty.
By jing, it is. And maybe I could even get Mr. Jonas to wrestle up some chess.
Good, Chester.
Then I'll be counting on it. I'll come here if it's all right.
Fine.
Kind of like to get away from the Long Branch later tonight.
Okay.
Well, how are you, Mr. Beaker?
Good evening.
I'll see you later, Matt.
All right, Kitty. Come on in, Jethro. You look like you can stand some warming up.
Marshal Dillon, I got some trouble out at my place.
Oh, what kind of trouble?
I've been invaded, attacked on my own property, shot at. Look at that there hat.
Well, that bullet come much closer, you'd have been shot, not shot at. Who was it, Jethro?
Couple coming through in the wagon. They took over my barn. Won't let me put a foot inside.
Well, what do you mean, a couple? You mean a man and wife?
How do I know if they're man and wife?
Well, maybe they just want shelter from the storm.
Marshal, I don't care what they want. They took possession of my barn without so much as a by your leave. And I want them thrown out of it. Tonight.
Well, can't we leave it till morning, Jethro?
Will Ross ain't spending the night on my property.
Will Ross? Well, is your daughter with him, Harmony?
Marshal, I got no daughter.
Well, you did up until 2 years ago when she married Ross and you threw them both off the place.
For the last time, I got no daughter.
You had one for 19 years, Beaker.
You know me for a man of my word, Marshal. And I'm telling you this. If you don't ride back out there with me right now and get them two off my property, I'm going to burn that barn down with them inside it.
Chester.
Yes, sir.
You better saddle up a couple of horses. I don't see any wagon, Jethro.
They hauled it inside the barn. Last time they're burning the coal oil stove in the tack room. I got a fire going in the blacksmith's forge.
Well, it's a cold night.
Well, charcoal and oil cost money. Come on out of there, Ross. I got the law with me now.
Jethro, if I'm going to handle this, I'll handle it my own way. Now, you stay right here. Come on, Chester.
Yes, sir.
Oh, don't you go easy on them. I want them two treated like any other criminals.
We make mighty good targets again in this snow, Mr. Dillon.
Yeah, I guess we do at that. I think the wind's dying down. May not turn into a blizzard after all.
Mr. Dillon, I just don't like the idea of walking right into a gun.
Well. Well, Ross.
Who is it? Who's out there?
It's Matt Dillon. Hold your fire, Will.
You stay back. I'm warning you, Marshal.
I just want to talk to you, Will. Now, come on, open up the door. It's cold out here.
Is old Jethro with you?
No, just me and Chester.
Well, you can come in alone, Matt. You leave your gun out there with Chester.
All right, open up. Here, Chester. Hang on to this.
I just don't like this one bit, Mr. Dillon.
We've got no choice.
Hurry up, man.
Welcome home, Will.
You took a big chance walking up here like that.
No, I doubt it. You wouldn't have shot anybody in cold blood before. I don't think a man changes that much in 2 years.
Not unless he's pushed hard enough.
Maybe. I take that gun now, Will.
You said you just wanted to talk.
Yeah, I do. But not over a gun sight. Now hand it over.
No, now stay back, Matt, or... No.
Now, like I said, Will, a man doesn't change that much.
No. No, I guess not. I wouldn't even have shot old Jethro.
I figured that.
We didn't aim to stop here, Marshal. We was trying to make Dodge and the storm come down on us.
A man takes shelter where he can.
I wouldn't even ask him for a drink of water. Not after the way he treated us when we got married. But we just didn't have no choice.
Where's Harmony, Will?
She's in the tack room. It's warmer there. I made up a bed for her with some straw and blankets.
A bed?
You better go talk to her, Marshal. She'll be right glad to see you after all this time.
All right. Chester.
Yes, sir?
You stay here with Ross. I'll be right back.
All right, Mr. Dillon. How you been making out, Will?
Harmony?
Who is it? Matt Dillon. Oh, Matt.
Well... What's going on here, young lady?
Oh, everything, Matt. We're in trouble, real trouble.
Oh, I see.
It'll be any time now, I think.
Don't you worry, Harmony. I'm going to get some help out here right now. Don't you worry, everything's going to be all right.
You get out of my barn and off my property, Ross. And take that woman of yours with you.
Jethro, I told you to stay outside.
I'll remind you these is my own premises, Marshal.
We'll worry about that later. Chester.
Yes, sir?
Go get Doc out here fast.
Well, what'll I tell him? Is Miss Harmony took down sick?
Not exactly.
What?
Just get riding.
Yes, sir. I'll get him. I'll get him right away.
Oh, there we
are. The kettle's boiling again, Doctor.
It certainly is.
It'll only be a minute now. There's nothing like a nice hot toddy on Christmas Eve.
Or any time.
Or any time. Yes. How right you are, Dr. Adams. You know, since Mr. Prudlin passed on, this time of year has seemed very lonely to me.
Oh, yes. Well, I always admired your husband, Mrs. Prudlin.
He was a fine man. Generous to a fault and kind and so thoughtful. Now, there you are.
Oh, thank you.
Just taste it. See if I've laced it enough with brandy.
With brandy? Yes. Oh, my. That's good. Yeah, that's very good. See, you know, Mrs. Prudlin, I nearly forgot the reason for my call this evening.
I'd hoped it was just social.
Well, in a sense, it's business. But in a greater sense, it's the spirit of Christmas. Your bill.
Oh,
as a very small gesture of my affection and esteem, I tear it up.
Why, Dr. Adams, how sweet.
I hope you won't think me familiar or forward. It was only meant as a small indication of my regard.
Dr. Adams, would you care to join me here on the settee? It might be warmer here, closer to the fire.
Well, yes, when I come to think about it, there is a chill in the air tonight.
Oh, sit still, I'll answer it. Good evening.
Good evening, Miss Prudlin. Excuse me, but it's dark here.
No, my gracious.
Well, yes, he is. Won't you come in?
Thank you. Doc, I've been looking all over town for you.
Oh, well, why did you have to find me?
Hmm?
Oh, never mind. What is it you wanted?
Well, it ain't me that wants you, Mr. Dillon.
Mr. Dillon, what's the matter with him?
There ain't nothing the matter with him. He just wants you out of the Beaker place right away. He told me to bring you back.
But this is Christmas Eve.
Well, my gracious alive, I know that.
Well, all right. Mrs. Prudlin, thank you for a wonderful time. And I hope you won't think ill of me for rushing off.
Duty calls, Doctor. I understand. Some men can afford to be selfless. And you are one of those men.
Mrs. Prudlin, I want you to know that
Doc, Mr. Dillon is waiting.
I'm coming! Good heavens, Chester, man's got to be polite, doesn't he? Good night, Mrs. Prudlin.
Good night, Doctor.
Come on, Chester.
Matt, I'm scared.
Easy now, Herman. Will and Chester will be back any minute, and they'll have Doc with them.
Why don't they hurry?
It won't be much longer now.
They've got to hurry. They've just got to.
Harmony, it's going to be all right.
Why couldn't Chester have gone alone? Why did you send Will with him?
If he stayed here, your father and him would have been at each other's throats.
Where is Pa?
Out there keeping the forge burning, heating up water. I'm looking sicker by the minute.
Why did it have to happen here, Matt?
Take it easy now.
If only I had something to hold on to. Maybe if you give me your hands.
Sure. There you go. There.
A baby's first look at the world ought to be all love and joy. Not like this. Not with Pa hating us like he does.
Now, Harmony.
He does. He hates us, Will and me both.
Maybe not as much as he puts on.
Matt! You're right, I think.
What do you mean?
It's not going to be much longer.
Take it easy now.
If Doc doesn't get here, you'll stay with me. You'll help me, won't you, Matt?
But, yeah, sure, I will. I'll do what I can, but... Well, he'll get there, though. Doc always makes it.
I hope so. I hope so, Matt. But I'm afraid he's going to...
All right. Now, what's all this fuss about?
Oh, Doc.
Yeah, it's a fine time of night to drag a man out in the snow. Yeah. Can't see why you didn't plan this thing at a decent hour, young lady.
Doc, I'm scared.
Yeah. Oh, fiddlesticks. Not a thing to worry about. Women were having young'uns long before you and I were even born.
Hurry, please.
No, wait a minute. You settle back there and you quit worrying. I'll tell you when it's time to worry.
Doc, do you mind if
Well, Matt, well, look at you. You're as wise as a sheep.
Well...
Oh, you thought you were going to have to take over by yourself, didn't you? Yeah, well, all right. You go on out there and tell that old buzzard to heat up some more water. He hasn't got half enough.
All right, Doc.
Yeah. And then you stay out from underfoot, will you, Matt? As me and Harmony's got work to do. Fella. Howdy, young fella. Welcome to the world.
Cold, Mr. Dillon. Stop snowing, though. Clear as a bell. There you are, Mr. Beaker. Better put some more wood on that forge, I guess. The fire's down pretty low.
So's my wood pile. It's a fool waste trying to heat a barn in midwinter.
I'll cut enough to make it up before we leave. One thing sure, Jethro. We ain't going out beholden to you.
You always was a fine one for talk.
And mostly, I can back it up.
Well, you didn't with Harmony. We don't need your old man's farm, you said. We'll have us one twice as big, you said.
Well, we ran into bad luck.
Oh, sure you did. You come crawling back with your tail between your
legs. Not to you, we didn't. We got caught here tonight by accident.
Bad luck, accidents. That's all you was born for. Just what I told Harmony when she defied me and up and married you.
Is that so? Now, you listen to me, Jethro.
All right, that's enough. Now, settle down, both of you. Will, I didn't give you back your gun just to have you start another argument.
I'm sorry, Marshal. I'm just kind of on edge, I reckon.
Well, you know, Marshal, I'll remind you that all of you are trespassers on my property.
I thought we settled that, Beaker. I'm here because you asked the law in, remember?
Well, you sure ain't done nothing.
Force of circumstances. They'll leave as soon as your daughter's able to.
Now, you can count on that.
I got no daughter, Marshal.
Well, anyway, while they're here, you're going to keep the peace.
Well, there ain't no law in talking.
There is if the talk leads to violence. And just remember that Harmony and Will don't like putting up with you any better than you like putting up with them.
Yeah. Real high and mighty, ain't they? Without a roof over their heads.
Well, a lot of folks might figure that makes you look worse than them.
Hey, what kind of talk is that, Marshal?
Well, a ranch this size, a big house on it, and a man your age trying to work it all by himself while his own kin roam the countryside. Some folks might figure a man like that's got a lot of meanness in him.
I told her what to expect if she married this fella.
You know, a man might tell somebody most anything when he's mad, Jethro, but it's plain stubbornness that makes him stick to it afterwards.
Why, they come sneaking into my barn like bandits, Marshal. Didn't even knock on my door. Now you're saying I ought to go crawling to him.
I didn't tell you what you ought to do.
It comes to that, though. And I ain't doing it.
Don't you worry, Jethro. We don't want no part of your ranch.
And it ain't being offered to you. I worked mighty hard to make this place what it is.
A little peace and quiet out here wouldn't do the patient any harm, you know.
How is she, Doc?
Is she going to be all right?
She's fine. And so's the young'un. She'll live to have a dozen more. And he'll grow up and probably come to a bad end, like being a marshal or country doctor. young lady, I'll be back in the morning, so you get yourself some sleep.
All right, Doc. What would you tell my father?
No, if you've got any telling to do, you tell it yourself.
Pa? Pa?
Well, answer, you old coot. She's talking to you.
Yes. What is it?
Pa.
Will you come in here and say howdy to your grandson?
Grandson? My grandson?
Of course he's your grandson.
By golly, I hadn't thought of that. He's my grandson.
I don't know now, Jethro. You just got through claiming you didn't even have a daughter.
Huh? Oh, confound it, Marshal. You're trying to put words in my mouth. Of course I got a daughter. And a grandson.
And as fine a boy as you could ask for.
Say, Will.
Yeah?
I'd be much obliged if you'd shake hands and kind of forget things, huh?
I can't see no reason not to, Jethro.
Good. Well, come on, Will. Let's look him over. By golly, grandson.
Crazy old fool. Young'un's born every day. It's nothing to get all worked up about.
Who you fooling, Doc?
Nobody. Well, what are we going to do? Huh? Head back to town?
Might as well. They'll probably have some ups and downs yet, but I guess the four of them will be able to work it out now.
Yeah, they'll spoil that kid rotten.
Turned out to be a fine night after the snow quit, didn't it? Yeah.
Look at those doggone stars.
Hey, Doc, why don't you come by the office when we get in town? Our Kitty's going to be there. We thought we'd have a little something to drink and sit around and talk a while.
Oh, sounds fine.
But it's pretty near 4 o'clock in the morning, Mr. Dillon.
That's right, Chester.
Well, Miss Kitty won't still be waiting up.
You want to bet?
Gunsmoke, on Tuned to Yesterday from the 20th of December, 1959, first heard on CBS. That was an Armed Forces Radio Service recording, bringing to a close this hour of Christmas shows on Tuned to Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great programs from radio's past. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark LeBonier. Happy holidays.